The From Day One podcast is brought to you by The Bridge and the Made in New York Media Center.
Hi, I'm Nick Bailey, and this is the From Day One podcast. With us today is Jenna Weiss Berman, founder and producer of Pineapple Street Media, a Brooklyn-based podcast company responsible for some of the most renowned and unique shows of our time. After close to a decade of experience in public media, from StoryCorps to The Moth to NPR, Jenna created BuzzFeed's podcast department with successful shows like Another Round. That show's host, Tracy Clayton and Heaven Negatu, were described by The Guardian as leading American cultural critics. Jenna went on to co-found Brooklyn's Pineapple Street Media, whose original shows range from Women of the Hour with Lena Dunham to Making Gay History to Missing Richard Simmons. One of the company's most notable collaborators was Hillary Clinton, who sat down with Pineapple Street for a series of candid conversations about America and the campaign trail. The podcast, called With Her, also included interviews with Bill Clinton and Tim Kaine. Other originals of the company include Heaven's Gate and Never Before with Janet Mock. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I will admit this will be my first time doing a meta podcast, hosting a podcast with a podcast host, talking about podcasting. It's probably not the first time that's happened to you, though, is it?
It is not the first time that's happened to me. I've talked about podcasts on podcasts, and I've had people come and talk about podcasts on podcasts.
So it's a pretty recent phenomenon, the idea of a podcasting company. It wasn't really a concept that even existed until, you know, a couple years ago. What were you seeing out there that made you want to start, you know, one of the early ones?
Well, I think it's sort of more about what we weren't seeing out there. So we were seeing a lot of interesting networks, like you have your Gimlet and your Panoply and places like that. But we were seeing very few places that really worked with partners to make like very high production value shows. So we started off as sort of a production for hire type company. So we would get hired by all sorts of places, New York Times, Hillary Clinton, Lena Dunham. What else at the beginning? We had a contract with Wieden Kennedy, the advertising agency. And so we were sort of setting out to help people make podcasts because people just kept coming up to me and my co-founder and asking us, you know, do you guys know anyone who can help me make this show? So we finally just started to think maybe that's what we should do.
But you've also done a lot of stuff that's original. How do you balance, you know, I guess contract work or creating for others with the stuff that you guys produce in-house?
Everything is produced in-house, but everything we have some kind of a partner on. So we'll do some branded things. We've done projects with brands like Google and Clinique and Morgan Stanley. But most of what we do is kind of creating original content, but with partners, if that makes sense.
Now, you'd had, you've worked in radio early on, obviously. Talk radio, of course, has a long and storied history. You know, it could be argued that podcasting is really just kind of like a minor change from radio, that there's not much difference between listening to, you know, an iPhone and a Walkman, right? Would you agree or disagree with that?
That podcasts aren't different than like radio?
Yeah, is it a fundamentally different medium in some way, or is it an extension of something that's happened before?
I think it's an extension, but I think you're allowed a lot more creativity with podcasts than you are with, you know, radio shows. I remember when I worked in public radio, we would have to fit the shows into a clock, so they would have to be exactly 53 minutes long. Which means that sometimes you're adding things you don't want to add or taking things away you don't want to take away. And I think there's a lot more freedom with podcasts. They can be whatever length you want. They can be different lengths every week. They can really kind of be what you want them to be. They don't, you know, they can have cursing. They can be like very kind of, you know, weird and honest. They can have small niche audiences that still make it worth it to do them. I think it's just kind of opening up audio and making it sort of more free and wild.
I mean, a lot of times when, you know, when a new medium comes along, for example, when, you know, early television consisted of essentially radio announcers reading news with a camera pointed at them, you know, and a lot of the stuff that we saw, you know, the early internet stuff was like, you know, essentially newspapers or TV, you know, mindset just grafted onto a new medium. But of course, as those mediums evolve, they generate all sorts of interesting things that nobody saw coming. Do you think that's happening with podcasting? Is that possible?
I think that people are doing really new and exciting things with podcasts. I think like
who?
Hopefully we're doing some cool stuff, but I think that something really exciting right now that wasn't possible in radio is these kind of short series, so like mini series, 6 to 10 episodes of like deep dive sort of documentary style reporting.
Like Serial would be the obvious archetype.
Yeah, so Serial kind of started that whole trend. And I remember talking to someone who was working on Serial before it had started, and they were kind of like, we want to do this thing that's sort of like audiobook and sort of like a podcast. It's like a limited run thing, and it was like a totally brand new idea. And it worked out incredibly well. And so that's something that I think people weren't able to do with radio, and that's...
Why not? Is it because they couldn't count on listening to everything sequentially or something like that, or...?
A lot of it is just how a radio schedule works, but yeah, definitely sequentially. I mean, I think a lot of shows now sometimes people are, like, dropping them all at once, Netflix style, but yeah, you definitely can't count on the audience to always be there at a specific time. So having on-demand listening just really opens things up. I think it can be, you know, there's a similar comparison to sort of like what you might see on, you know, a weekly show on ABC on television versus what you might see on a Netflix. It's just, it's a more engaged audience. And I think, you know, podcasts are definitely the same. It's a much more engaged audience. They're there very intentionally to listen to that one thing. It's not like they just turned on their radio and they're there. And so I think that kind of intentionality of listenership has made it so that there can be these like very special limited run things that get tons of attention and people are really excited about them.
Does it make storytelling easier?
Yeah, I think it makes storytelling easier because you don't have to like stretch it forever and ever. I think, yeah, also with radio, there's this strict schedule. So having something that's sort of like a 6-episode miniseries doesn't really work because you need to have your like This American Life at this time, you know, every week of the year, and then The Moth at this time and Morning Edition. So figuring out how to fit a miniseries into the radio has always been difficult. And so, yeah, I think podcasting has really freed open that space.
Do you see yourself as a storyteller? Is that something that you wanted to pursue early on? Is that how you got here in the first place?
I don't see myself as a storyteller. I am not a podcast host. I'm a producer, and that's where I've always been comfortable. I really like helping other people tell stories. I think a lot of people have amazing stories and don't fully know how to tell them in a way that's really compelling for an audience and that can really connect them as a subject to their audience. So I think my job is really to kind of help other people tell their stories.
How did you get started doing that? What were some of the first things you did like that?
I mean, I was always interested in radio. I ran my college radio station, but then I got an internship at StoryCorps out of college. So I was doing that. And then I was working at a corporate law firm as like a financial collector, which was like, I was like, oh, I know this isn't what I want to be doing, but I needed to make some money. And so I would go to StoryCorps in the mornings and then go to this law collector job in the afternoon and like yell at huge corporations for not paying the place. So I guess when I first really started doing that, you know, helping people tell their stories with audio was at StoryCorps. It was a new company at the time. For people who don't know, StoryCorps is, it's kind of this like massive oral history project, where people interview people that they know and love, and everything is archived at the Library of Congress, and some of them are played on Morning Edition on NPR. So I was traveling around the country kind of helping people figure out how they wanted to tell their stories. And I was like 23 and didn't really know what I was talking about, but I figured it out after a little while.
Was that like your first big break? Would you describe it that way?
I don't know. It was definitely a big break. I've been very lucky with big breaks.
More than one.
Yeah, I've been really, really lucky.
What are some of the other ones?
Like I went to a great dinner once where I met Alex Bloomberg, who now runs Gimlet Media, and it was before he'd started that, and we were sort of talking about what it might be like to start a podcast company, and he put me in touch with someone at NPR who had me start a new NPR show. And that was a chance meeting at a dinner that led to me being a head producer on a new NPR podcast. I think BuzzFeed was an amazing break. I don't know. I've been lucky. I also work extremely hard. I'm a real hustler, so maybe it has something to do with that too.
Right, working your whole life to be an overnight sensation, so to speak.
Yes.
So you created episodes, you created podcasts or radio broadcasts, you created a whole show. What made you think that you were someone who could create a whole company?
When I was at BuzzFeed, they basically had me start a podcast department there. They'd never done podcasting before. And that meant not just that I was making shows, but it meant that I was figuring out legal contracts and hiring people and finding sponsorship for things. And so when my friend Max approached me and said, maybe we should start our own company, I was kind of like, yeah, I've been building the skills. It's sort of like I was running a company within a company, because no one at BuzzFeed had ever done anything in audio before, really. So I sort of had to teach everyone how to do it, and I had to figure it out myself. And I learned a lot doing that. And I never set out to be an entrepreneur. It wasn't ever something I wanted to do, but I was kind of like, I have these skills. I think I could do this. I could make a lot more money doing this. And I could make a lot, I could just have a lot more freedom in the kind of shows I want to make if I do my own thing.
Was there something about, being a business person that was fundamentally different than what you've been doing before? Something that surprised you about it?
The most surprising thing is that I've loved being a business person. I thought that I was going to kind of be the main producer person here, and that my partner Max would be kind of the business person. But it's really, we really do things equally, and I've become kind of a bit of a CFO here. I've gotten really interested in money and saving and investing and projections and figuring out how to always, have enough money to pay everyone. And
do you still call people and yell at them like you did before?
I don't not do that. I can be a little scary, but that's also part of being a business person. But yeah, I've gotten really into the business side of things. And I really love, I love meeting new potential partners. I love working really hard on bringing in business and, setting up a great pitch. And I really want to figure out how to sell us as the best company to do this, because I know we are. And so it's all just been kind of a fun and crazy challenge. And I actually sort of like the business side even more than the production side.
That's good news. When you make a decision like the one that you made, to do that, what's the first day like? What are the first things you do when you do that?
Well, I was very conservative about it. I didn't want to just go into I didn't want to just kind of say, okay, let's start a business and then quit my job. And also I had a baby that was being born right around this time too, my first kid. So I had a lot to figure out, and I couldn't just have a period of time where I was making no money. So before I even left BuzzFeed, my business partner and I had started talking to potential clients, and they were really good potential clients. So yeah, our first four clients who we were going to make podcasts with were, yeah, that was Lena Dunham, Hillary Clinton, The New York Times, and Wieden Kennedy. And we had all four of those lined up before I told BuzzFeed that I was definitely leaving, because I basically wanted to know where our first large chunk of money was coming from. And around that time, we were also having interesting conversations about how to fund the company. Should we take venture capital like all the other podcast companies were doing and seemed like kind of the thing to do? Or should we try to make a whole bunch of money in the first year that we could then, take more risks with the second year.
What goes into that kind of decision?
We met with a lot of venture capitalists, and it wasn't really my vibe. We talked to a lot of people who had taken venture capital and a lot of people who hadn't, and we wanted to get their experiences. And we learned a lot of really interesting things. And the overwhelming thing, every single person we talked to said, do not take money unless you absolutely have to. And so we didn't. And I feel great about it, which isn't to say that we never will. Maybe if we have some huge, crazy project we want to do, we'll take some money from somebody someday. But it's been amazing to kind of bootstrap the thing and decide, make all the decisions, you know, decide exactly what shows we'd make and what shows we wouldn't, and not always have to be driven by money 100%. So we do some shows completely for free. And then we do some shows, you know, for companies that pay us a lot of money to fund those free things. But I think if we had venture backing, we wouldn't necessarily be able to say yes to, like, you know, a like interesting, cool leftist organization that wants to start a podcast but doesn't have any money.
Right. You've also been very outspoken about the need for, you know, diversity in media, diversity in podcasting specifically. When you start your company, how do you build values like that in from the first day?
I think it was, it was sort of implied in a way. Like I wasn't ever going to have a company that wasn't those things, basically. So I know, like, at BuzzFeed, having shows that were different and not all hosted by the same kind of person, that was really important to us. That's just always been a thing I felt was really important. I also think it's really good for business. Like, I think some people think it's a crass way of talking about diversity, but, like, if we just look at it as something that we can do so that we can pat ourselves on the back and say we have diversity, I don't think that's very effective. And I think a lot of that I learned at BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed has this kind of idea that we will, you know, they were kind of like, we'll create media for people who want media, and that media doesn't yet exist, and that's going to be a great business model for us. And it's true. It's like, there are a ton of audiences who podcasts are not being made for right now. And that the gap is closing and more shows are being made for new audiences, which is amazing. But when I was first in this industry, it was really, like, extremely overwhelmingly white, like, upper middle class male listeners and hosts. And that is changing. I'm really happy about that. But there's still a lot of work to be done.
Got it. I mean, you're seeing, it seems like there's, like, pent up demand. You're seeing that with web series too that have been picked up and podcasts. Like, it's really, it's a surprise, except for all the people who've been screaming it for the whole time, right?
Totally. Yes. And it's, I think it's just, like, business wise, it's short sighted to not look at many different audiences. And just from, like, a I don't know if it's a moral standpoint or just like everyone should have content made for them. And if that's not happening, there's a problem. And if it is happening, it's awesome.
That's great. Now, you're based in Brooklyn too, which is, of course, famously, you know, diverse and cosmopolitan. Is that, are those two things related?
Well, I mean,
or did you just live here?
I just lived here. I mean, the podcast industry is really New York centered right now. It wasn't always. I think for a while, NPR was kind of, you know, they were sort of running the show. So there was a lot of DC based stuff. Then there was a lot of LA based comedy podcasts, and there still are. But this kind of, like, really beautiful narrative series stuff that's coming out is sort of all in New York and mostly in Brooklyn, actually. And yeah, I mean, I was living here and I just can't imagine really living anywhere else. So that's sort of why we're here.
Well, what are some of the characteristics of, like, a great podcast producer? Like, what are the essentials that people might not be aware of if they think it's just a microphone and a tape recorder?
I think that something we realized is, like, even when we first started hiring people here, we just wanted people with, like, really good technical skills who could edit something and, you know, figure it out. But I think a big part of it is people need to be able to really build a story. Like, they have to figure out an arc, and like, they have to know how to find the most compelling audio. And not everyone can do that. There are some people who are really great at the technical side of things and can, you know, cut up an interview beautifully, but can't figure out how to craft a story. So that's really big. I also think, I don't know if this is totally true, but for me, I think I'm a pretty good producer, partially because I'm not interested in being a host. And I think that people who really want to be hosts should be hosts, and people who want to be producers should be producers. And you can kind of tell when somebody wishes that, when a producer wishes that they were the person on the microphone.
Right. Being egoless, I guess, is what you're saying. Or...
Yeah, I don't know if I'm egoless, but yes.
But in a theoretical world, that's a good characteristic to have.
Yes, and I would love to be egoless.
I read an interview with you that was, I think, from last year. You said that your dream was to start a podcast called Talking Tory.
That's kind of a joke.
You'd eat yakitori and talk with Tori Amos. It's been actually, January will be 2 years since that interview.
Oh my God.
Do you still cite that as your number one dream job?
It's not my number one dream job anymore. It probably once was. I mean, I think it would be funny if my idea was like, you talk with different interesting people who were like big in the 90s about a different Tori Amos song every week, and then it ends with Tori Amos on the show, and you eat yakitori and talk Tori. But that's not my dream anymore. I mean, it is. Tori, if you're out there, we should do something. But a thing that we set out to do when we started Pineapple was we really wanted people to say no to us. So we wanted to ask for things that were so crazy, and like come up with story ideas that were so crazy that like people would be like, no, that's crazy. And it just hasn't happened. And we keep asking people to do crazy shit with us and they keep saying yes.
Like what?
I mean, even like when we first started, I just kind of cold emailed somebody I knew on Hillary Clinton's campaign and was like, we don't want Donald Trump to win. Is there anything we can do to help? We know how to make podcasts. And like a month later, we had the Hillary Clinton campaign podcast that she was on. So that was something where we were like, oh my God, we were sure they'd say no. Now we have to make it happen. And I think it turned out pretty well. And now there's a lot that I can't talk about for 2018, but a lot of what we've been interested in lately is, we're kind of interested in this sort of like podcast to Hollywood pipeline that's been happening a lot, where podcasts are being optioned. And so we're trying to figure out how we can work with Hollywood production companies on the kinds of things where like we would make a podcast. If it was successful, they would shop it around Hollywood or try to make it themselves, and we would all be producers on it. So I think we're interested in like seeing where a podcast's intellectual property can go and being involved in that. I'm like excited to, you know, be on like a film set and see how that all works. It's just like the main thing we want to do is always be trying new things. And that's the most important part. And so this is sort of something I'm thinking about right now is like Hollywood podcasts.
Sure. If Pineapple Street turned into the thing that you'd, you know, always dreamed of, speaking of dreams, you know, what would that look like?
I think we never want to be a huge company. I think that a dream Pineapple would maybe be a staff of 25 people and like 10 amazing series that come out every year, short run, like beautiful, either like fiction or narrative, documentary podcasts that have real like amazing reporting, amazing characters, and that people kind of know us as the place that's doing that best.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. You've been listening to From Day One, How Brooklyn Entrepreneurs Got Their Start. This series is made possible by a grant from the Made in New York Media Center in conjunction with The Bridge, a news site dedicated to reporting on business in Brooklyn. For more from The Bridge, to learn more about today's guest, or to listen to more episodes of From Day One, visit us at thebridgebk.com. That's thebridgebk.com. From Day One is produced by Kim Thornton, Steve Kep, and myself, Nick Bailey. Audio editing and post-production by Al Sigman. The From Day One logo was created by Joe Meyer, and our theme music was performed by Jody Rockwell and the Ambulamps. Thanks for listening.